The Breakfast Club.
Scotty Gallen, good morning to you.
Good morning, Andrew. You know, sorry, I was just wandering looking for some...
Gave me a fright there. I thought you followed me in.
No, no, I need to get some darkened sunglasses for your pants. It's disappointing this isn't a visual medium, because you've produced the reddest pair of pants that's not seen on a golf course.
I just like to brighten up your morning, Scott.
Mate, they're outstanding. Where have you found them?
No, I don't know. I've done the opposite in lockdown. I've lost a few kicks, so I've been able to pull out a few of the old pants at the back of the cupboard, which has been good.
Do you have every colour?
I've got quite a few. Green, purple, red, cream.
They're very
blue.
Good.
Yep, light blue.
I wish I could pull them off myself, to be honest.
It's inspired from the great Daniel Harford's light blue jacket that he wears. I enjoy that. So,
that's one of his go-tos.
Yeah, it's one of his go-tos. So I enjoyed that. Bit of colour in your morning. We're very dark here in Melbourne. Everyone wears
it
black.
It is very dark.
Everyone wears brown, and it's a bit, You go overseas, and everyone's wearing all sorts of colours.
No, you belong on the French Riviera. I agree with that.
Not quite. Maybe in a German pub somewhere.
Was that where Steele Sidebottom thought it was?
Oh, dear.
Now, Eddie Maguire does so many good things for football.
He does.
He is a wonderful ambassador for the game. But he needs to watch a video replay of when an opposition club's player is in trouble and then have a look at last night when his own player is in trouble. That's the only spot where he gets in trouble. Yes. And he can't see it because he's, God love him, he's just Eddie.
Yep.
Because his defensive steal is, oh, I made a mistake. He apologised. All good.
Move on.
Oh, look.
Nothing to see here.
He was on a couch, walked out a door going to the bathroom, ended up on the street, didn't know where he was.
Have you ever done that?
Well, see, this is a grey area. But no, I mean, we've all had big nights and can't remember bits, but I've managed to stay in the wherever I'm supposed to be.
And clothed. Yeah.
So Eddie's just flippant. Oh, he had some scotch, hasn't... But all these decisions about him having the scotch is the issue, Ed. He had some scotch and then couldn't remember.
Correct.
And saying 4 weeks is excessive.
What's
the Melbourne kid, Spargo?
Yeah,
got
Charlie
two.
Spargo. Yep, and Keziah Pickett got one.
For getting in an Uber, going to a party. Again, broke the rules.
Yep.
But then they got home safely and weren't drunk, weren't picked up by the police. How Collingwood thinks four is excessive is just their arrogance shining out again.
Yeah.
Look, it's a big whack for a night on the tiles, but we're not allowed to have a night on the tiles.
No, correct. And there's even now, I know there were different circumstances, but in terms of the lockdown laws that have been enforced across those suburbs, and we are thinking of all of you this morning, if you are stuck at home again, those were very similar restrictions that have been placed on AFL players, even throughout the period where it had been eased a little.
So back on Eddie. So Jack Stephen incident. Eddie was... beating each other. We need to know why they're having press conferences. Tell us everything that happened. I don't think we've got the full story of Steele. And their line is, I still can't remember. Well, I've tried that line a lot when I've come home later, and it doesn't really wash.
I'll run you through a timeline here, and there's a significant gap.
There's gaps.
Steele Sidebottom plays on Friday night against GWS.
And struggled. Apparently that's part of the reason for the bender. Keep going.
Right, okay. He flew back to Melbourne Saturday afternoon with the team. He went to Jeremy Howe's house after he'd blown out his knee.
Which is not a problem, and Eddie says it's one of the great leadership things he's ever seen.
His teammate Lyndon Dunn joined them. At about midnight, Sidebottom and Dunn took an Uber from Howe's place to drop off Dunn at his home.
So why don't we go on to Steele's home? Yeah, keep going.
Steele Sidebottom then went on to ex-teammate and Pies staff member Daniel Wells' house.
So what time's this? So Wells is still
unclear.
Up.
After midnight? Yeah. Wells must have been. He might have had a couple as well. Just before 7:30 a.m. on Sunday, police found Sidebottom partly naked in Williamstown and took him home.
So where does Wells live?
I don't know, but there's a significant gap there of about 7 hours where we're not sure what's happened. Collingwood have gone, it's a disgrace. And that's part of the AFL charges as well, mind you. That 7 hour gap. So the AFL know what happened, or at least some of what happened.
Yeah.
So anyway, Completely agree with you with Eddie. He does let himself down in those situations where he goes on the front foot, attacks everyone else, and then when it comes back to Collingwood, but that's been a conflict for 20 years. It always has. It always will be.
The spin for Steele is he's such a great bloke think it's excessive, but he's accepted it for the good of the game.
Oh my God.
What? That's like he's getting credit for not appealing this monumental stuff up.
We'll take one for the team, even though he broke three rules.
This is why Eddie's the best in the business, because he kept bringing back the argument on his TV show too. Oh, but look, he's accepted it graciously for the good of the game so we can all get moving. And how about the vice captaincy? Everyone, you know, Lockie Hunter, admittedly, he did a lot worse than Steel Side Modern, but it's in the same sort of discussion.
Yes.
Steps down for vice captaincy because that's not sort of leadership. One-on-one.
He was on fire. On fire.
But so, Eddie won't have a bar of even questioning whether this is good leadership.
What do you think about the Steel Side Bottom suspension, everyone? 0416 90 50 52 is the SMS number. 0416 90 50 52. Too harsh, too soft, about right. Let us know. 1300 652 927 if you want to give us a call. John's done that. He's on the road. John, good morning.
How you going, fellas?
We're going well.
The Steel Side Bottom, I reckon it's about fair.
Probably
the biggest mistake. Look, it's gone on a bit of a bender. A lot of these players are supposed to be professional, and a lot of people are out of work, mate. It's not really a good sign. And Eddie, mate, when you've done something wrong, admit it. And I think you should lose his vice captain. What I rang up about, though, was my player, Danaher, when's he going to play?
Ooh, the eternal question. I reckon you'll be asking that a few more times this year, John.
John, a couple of weeks ago, it was all a little bit of excitement. He was training, but that's gone quiet again.
Yeah, it won't be this week.
He's not playing this week. But you'd think this extended season that's dribbling on, at some point he has to show up.
Well, here's a question for you, Scott. Should they have traded him now? I mean, when you look back at it, should they have just traded him last year?
Two first-round picks, wasn't it?
No, well, that's what they wanted, but they couldn't ascertain.
Well, it was going to end up pretty close to it.
Yeah, and a few swaps.
Of course they should have. I mean, the record of clubs backing in, oh, no, we're going to keep you and you'll fall back in love in the place. The record, the stats show that doesn't often work.
And, yes.
And his body's sus, and it could remain sus for a long time. The kid clearly wanted to go. I think they should have swallowed and said, yep, mate, for the benefit of your career, we get why you're doing it. Give us as much as you got. And they probably could have ended up getting two out of Sydney. Sydney should have done that. Like, Sydney, they're not the greatest team going around. I mean, Buddy's hurt. They haven't got many stars up there. So if they had got Danaher and sacrificed a couple of high draft picks, I would have done it in a heartbeat.
If he did go, he would have been that centrepiece of that team.
Of course he would. And he'd be playing. He'd be miraculously fit.
Is that what he wanted?
Yeah, of course he did. But he wanted I can walk around Sydney even though I'm 7 foot and no one really cares who I am. That's what he wants.
Yeah.
He's that sort of character.
Yep.
Like he's been, I think, hiding out in Dalesford, like getting out of Melbourne. Where he's been training and running around. And so I thought it should have happened. But Essendon can be pig-headed with these things.
What's he worth now then? Because he's a free agent. So this is the thing. If Sydney bid high enough, they'll get him. And Essendon will lose him for pretty much nothing.
Yeah, I think I'd still pay him. I'd pay him on potential. I mean, you've seen it. You'd have some caveats in the contract for the next couple of years after it. But the first year, you'd front end, so make sure Essendon doesn't match it.
So if you need a key forward, why don't you go and offer Essendon some draft picks this season for Joe Danaher?
Yeah, but he has to agree to that.
Yeah.
And he wants out of... Like, I don't think he wants to move across town to North Melbourne. I don't think that's the issue. I think it's more environment.
Get out of
Victoria. As in, get out of Victoria.
Well, everyone's doing that at the moment, aren't they? If we're allowed. What about the jail time that you face? If you're from one of the hotspots and you're found in New South Wales, having crossed the border, 6 months jail and $11,000 fine.
So Vic Rose had a rush on licence changes. Everyone's trying to say, oh, I'm not from... Ramersville.
Your grandma in Sydney or South Australia just going, hey, grandma, really can we sign up?
Yeah, no, that's a bit harsh. I don't think anyone's keen on travelling at the moment.
No, no. Everyone very much staying put. Leroy and Tassie has joined us on Steel Sidebottom. What did you think of the penalty, Leroy?
Well, I think it's fair enough, mate. We've got to hold these blokes accountable. Like, if you've got a job or, you know, something like that, I wonder what the penalty would be from there. So they have to be held accountable, fellas.
Yeah, and no, I agree.
Totally agree, Leroy.
Agree with Leroy. The when you consider that for the past however many months, you've only been allowed a few people at funerals and weddings.
Oh, yeah.
I hardly think, it's excusable to go out on a bender and everyone say, well, you're a good bloke, so it's all right. So, yeah. I actually think this suspension 4 weeks was about spot on.
Oh, so do I. I mean, Hunter got six. That was club, not AFL. But if the kids, the Melbourne kids got one and two, you can't tell me Steele doesn't deserve a couple extra.
Yeah. No, it was a strange couple of statements from Collingwood and then Eddie backing that up last night. So I'm sure we'll see more fallout today. Do you think the vice-captaincy will be a discussion?
I'm not a massive fan of dumping it for one bad incident myself, but Matthew Lloyd in that, what I heard last night, made a good point. So Jordan
McGarry, let's have a listen. Before you get there, let's have a listen to what Eddie and Matty Lloyd had to say on Footy Classified last night, Channel 9.
When the next player walks in, Jordan De Goey walks in, and Steele and Scotty Pendlebury are sitting there going, what do we do? I'd be embarrassed if I was Steele in this period of time adjudicating on someone else.
These days, the media is very much, you could cure cancer and get a parking ticket on Monday, and the lead will be the parking ticket. Of course it's a massive story, and nobody's saying it, but I'm just saying to Matthew, there's only been one person allegedly without sin, and they put him on a cross. So you've got to forgive and have empathy.
You're too close to this situation.
No, I'm not.
You've got a love for this guy, which is fine. And I reckon, I heard you 3 weeks ago, Ed, you said, how are these guys doing? I said, Ed, someone, Ollie Wines, it might have been. I'll say, you know what? Someone else will make a mistake, Ed. And you'll go, these players, how can they do it?
I think you're over-dramatising what I said.
I'd love to get it up if we could, because that's exactly what you said. Because Matt, he's made a massive... And you know what?
What are you doing? Why are you going on the prosecution line here, mate? We're saying the guy's accepted his situation.
Exactly, and he's made a mistake. Can we get on with it?
Yeah, okay, and that's what I just said. And I was asked if I was going to sack him as vice-captain of the club, and I said no.
It'll be a consideration. I'd be shocked if it wasn't.
Well, you can ask me, because I'm the president. I said no.
But it'll come down to bucks, I would have thought.
Well, it'll still come back, but it comes back to the board.
Yeah, that's right.
And the answer is, at the moment, no. Yeah.
And the leadership group will have a say as well.
And it comes back to the board, and we said no.
There you go. Who's running Collingwood?
It comes back and says no. But Lloydie's point's right. So Jordan De Goey, I mean, we love Jordan, but there's a chance he might... on average, do something maybe incorrect.
Yes.
So he walks in here, Steelo and Scott Pendlebury, who's the cleanest skin we've got. So that's all right. Pendles can have his spiel. But then he looks at Steelo and goes, hang on, mate. Fining me 10 grand for a night out. It's very difficult for Steelo to look him down the aisle and go, well, yeah.
I agree. I think we may see an announcement from Steele in the next few days that he's voluntarily stepped out.
I think that window, he had the window there. I don't think couple extra days.
Well, I think he had to wait until the penalty was announced, which was only late last night. So we'll wait and see what happens on that front. Interesting that all the players have got to move out of the hotspots over the last 24 hours.
Yeah. Is the AFL paying for them to go somewhere?
Yeah, a couple of, I mean, not everyone has family in Melbourne with a few interstate players here. So the AFL's paid for a couple of players to stay in hotels. That's the same goes for officials and umpires as well, because they're all part of the bubble. So, not a bad, hopefully not at the coronavirus hotels, that'd be a setback, or any of those security guards or fake security guards.
They're going well, yeah.
Not well at all. The Faulty Towers is the front page of the Herald Sun today. What about, you've been involved in some of this action, Scott. It's called ghosting. Now, I know you've done some ghosting for players writing articles.
Well, oh, God, I didn't know where that was going there for a minute.
In the Herald Sun.
I'm thinking, well, he's on to me about a few things here. Oh, yes, I've ghostwritten.
Ghosting in a different context is... exploiting a lot of the hotel staff, where what they'd done was put fake names on.
Yeah, so
that they
Andrew Mays worked a couple
people.
Of shifts, and Andrew Mays doesn't exist.
Correct. So, interesting times.
Apparently other states brought in the army to guard, to work as the guards.
Yep.
No, not us. We employed nightclub security people and are shocked that things have gone a little bit pear-shaped.
Yeah, what a surprise. Yeah, so anyway, hopefully these AFL players are all okay moving out of the hot spots. And every indication now, Scotty, that everyone will be on the move anyway from Victoria over the next couple of weeks interstate. So
we'll come
good luck to them.
Normally Sundays when at the latest we'll get the next round, and yeah, I think you'll find, hopefully we'll know before then, but yeah, clubs will be away, away, away.
A few other bits and pieces from yesterday. Interesting to see Craig Bellamy in the Melbourne Storm. They're preparing for the whole season away.
Well,
they're in Queensland. It's nice and sunny. 22 degrees yesterday.
They've got all the families up there.
Yeah. Mini school going, as Dave Donaghy said, with the 30 kids. So, yeah.
They're smart. They've been ahead of this because they've had to, given it's Sydney-based setup. Good on them.
Yep. So well done to the Melbourne Storm. They play tonight as well against the Sydney Roosters. So
that's a good game.
Yeah, ripper. They might be making Suncorp Stadium their home for the whole year, which is a very unique situation. Same thing for the Melbourne Rebels. We're going to chat to Andrew Kellaway later on, who was the leading try scorer in the competition before the whole thing fell apart because of COVID-19. And they're just about the most affected code in the country, considering it spans five countries.
Yeah.
So they've had to totally reshape their fixture. So we'll chat to him about that. They might be stuck in Sydney as well. The A-League restart was announced yesterday. I've never seen a fixture with so many TBCs. It's like indoor soccer on a Monday night. You know who's going to turn up and who's not. It was ridiculous. So they released the fixture, and I reckon 50%, because of the doubt over the future of the Melbourne teams, even though they're going to restart the season in Melbourne between two of the Melbourne sides, apart from that, pretty much every fixture that involved a Melbourne team was TBC.
Well, they've got to get out here as well. So where's their hub going to be? Sydney somewhere?
Yeah, it looks like I reckon the whole competition will end up being based in Sydney, which has been the criticism of a lot of the FFA decisions anyway, very Sydney biased. So that's another one that's just totally up in the air. And this is a crucial little period for them too, because they're going to move to that winter slot for next year as well. What did you make of that last week, that decision from the A-League? Is that going to help them at all to gain any exposure or help them in terms of developing players for the national team or not?
My thoughts are they need to do something, because it was just strangling itself out of... Like, no, people had lost interest. So I come from a... I'm probably a good person in that I don't follow it with passion, but I enjoy it. So, and I know it's on. But it was becoming... I don't even know who plays for who anymore.
Yeah.
It had lost a lot. And maybe it needed to do something. So you get in winter, you sort of shuffle around the AFL, you might be able to get some clarity in there.
Well, I had a look at the Melbourne Victory roster last night. And there was about... I reckon I knew six players.
Yeah.
And I used to commentate the sport.
Exactly.
So that's the issue. We don't know any of the players. There's no connection. There's no publicity. It was poorly marketed. That was a decision made by the FFA. But now there's that separation between the national body and the league itself. So hopefully the owners can get together and come up with some better strategic marketing over the next year or so.
The issue was it sort of had its moments in the summer, but then it kept going. Like, it didn't end till May. So. It was this weird ending where everyone had forgotten about it.
Yeah.
And, the finals are on.
Yeah. Season goes... it's interesting because if you want to make it as close to an overseas product, well, then you've got to have a number of rounds. But there's only, 10 teams, 11 teams.
So they're going to have finals in October after the end of AFL? That would be... Like, October's a sweet window.
Yeah,
you could generate hype in October.
Well, not this year, you couldn't.
No, well, this year, I'm not even worried about this year.
Yeah, but going forward, I think it's not a bad idea. It's just, in footy season, I can't see them getting any traction.
No, they're not going to.
The only hope that they've got is that clubs put players and coaches and officials up for interviews and exposure on the back of footy. So what I'd be doing if you're the Melbourne Victory or Melbourne City, you're going and getting some partnerships with the AFL club so you can run stuff like concurrent memberships. If the team's playing away, if you join Melbourne Football Club, you might also get three bonus Melbourne Victory games, like that. That might work for Melbourne are playing away. But we haven't seen a lot of cross-code cooperation in the past, so I don't know if it's going to happen quickly, but that's one to keep an eye on as well. And just before we hit the break, I was very concerned with Chris Golding.
What's happened to...
Possibly looking elsewhere. So yesterday, the Melbourne United CEO put out a little bit of a statement. He's spoken in the Herald Sun today and said, we're having a look. He's a free agent. He's free to do what he wants. Now, the free agency period in the NBL has been moved slightly to accommodate
for the
COVID-19
crisis. Didn't they have a period where
crisis.
Players opted out recently?
Yes, they did. Yep, yep.
And so, nothing happened there, but now he's considering his...
Yeah, he's considering his options, and they've basically given him some space to decide on his future, knowing that there's a couple of other clubs that are interested in Chris Golding's services. Now, he has been Melbourne United for the last 6-7 years. So, and even going back to before United, the Tigers days. So that would be a massive loss, Chris Golding. One of our favourites here on the Breakfast Club. He's fantastic with all of his media exposure for him and the club and the league. And he's an Australian boomer as well, which helps because he plays on the international stage. If he was to go, that'd be a massive loss, Scotty.
Surely they've got the. Surely it's not a money issue. You'd think United would be paying enough to keep him interested.
You'd hope not. NBL free agency begins on July 15. So that's one. We might even try and touch base with Chris in the next couple of weeks just to see.
CG43, wow.
Where his head's at. I hope that he stays with all my heart. But anyway, we'll wait and see what happens there. Let's head across to the UK. Russell Milton is our footballing expert over there, and he joins us on the line. Russ, good morning to you.
Good morning, Maisie. Good morning, Scott. Hope you're both well.
Oh, we're good, Russ, our heart broke last week.
Have we not talked to Russ?
No, we haven't. Yeah. So, Russ, I think we broke every broadcasting rule in Australia and the UK and around the world by Half and Whitey last week basically commentating Cheltenham's game. They were riding it with you. How have you felt in the last 7 days? You were hoping to move up to League One, but unfortunately came unstuck in the second leg of the playoff.
Yeah, I know. We thought we did the hard bit by winning away 2-0. No one really knew how everyone was going to perform because of being off for 3 months. And, we literally had 2.5 weeks to train and get ourselves up to speed. It was the same for all four teams in the playoffs. But we did really well away from home, won 2-0. Didn't look quite comfortable. Didn't look, in any sort of trouble, really. And we really, at home, we just had to see the game out. Didn't have to do anything dramatic. Northampton come at us from the off, and they brutalised the game, if you like, and ran over the top of us. We couldn't really turn it around. Didn't help by giving them two bad goals. The second and the third one were if it was a Sunday morning player who had just come in from the pub, you would have said, "What the heck's he doing?" our players were doing it, and they've been magnificent all season. You know, we hadn't let 3 goals in all season. We hadn't lost by more than one. We were by far the stingiest defence. So, it was a game out of the blue, really. None of us could really put our finger on it. And the fact that Northampton on the night were just after us and never let go. And once we give them that little bit of a sniff of a chance, that was it. You know, they took it. And fair play to them. They went on to win the final 4-0 against Exeter at Wembley. So, you know, the turnaround from them as well, from the first game to the next two, you know, the our game in the final was dramatic. So fair play to them. I mean, the good thing about us is we've kept most of the squad for next year. So we've got 15, 16 players still there. We just need 2 or 3, 4 maybe loan players and maybe 1 or 2, long-term signings. But it was a good season overall, and no one expected us to finish fourth. It's philosophically, you got to look at it like that, I suppose. But it was disappointing to get so far and not quite get over the line.
Clearly, the goalkeeper's been let go, Russ.
Yeah, he was on loan from Wigan. he was out, and Wigan have just gone into administration today, haven't they? Because of the coronavirus issues. But we would have him next season. He was fantastic for us. He only came in January because our other goalie broke his leg, Scott Flinders, and he was really good, young lad. But he got man of the match in the first game because he was everywhere, really good he was. But second game, yeah, different goalie. We were like, who's that in goal? It's his twin brother.
It was heartbreaking, and unfortunately, Russ, we're not coming over soon. Our outside broadcast has been put on hold, so we'll wait till you're in the playoffs next year, and we'll be heading over for that, hopefully with a few less coronavirus cases in the UK.
Yeah, that'd be good, yeah. Hopefully we'll go straight up, so we'll be automatic, so you can come over for the last game or two, yeah.
I don't mind the drama, though, Russ, of heading to Wembley. That would be good fun. So, fingers crossed.
If you can get up, that's the best way to go, isn't it, yeah?
Yeah, fingers crossed for next year, which won't be too long as well because the season has run so late. You'll be starting again in about 5 weeks' time. I wanted to ask about the Premier League, and obviously a lot of focus on the top of the table with a lot of the big teams up there. But what about at the bottom of the table? We know Liverpool closed out the Premier League title this week, but looking down the bottom, you've got Watford on 28 points, West Ham 27, Aston Villa 27, Bournemouth 27, and Norwich City on 21. Who's most likely out of that bunch? I know Norwich are a long way behind. Who's most likely out of that bunch to head down?
They, all five of them have started really poor, haven't they? There hasn't been a win amongst them yet. There's only been one draw. So, and saying that, West Ham are just they're 2-1 up against Chelsea. Yeah. So, I mean that would be a huge win for them to get them 3 points away from the bottom guys, from the bottom three. I think Norwich will be down. They've looked okay in their games, but Arsenal beat them 4-0 quite comprehensively a couple of hours ago. Bournemouth look the body. I'm not too keen on the body language of the Bournemouth players at the minute. They got beat 4-1 at home by Newcastle, who they were down in that sort of way towards the bottom of the table. But a 4-1 win for Newcastle at Bournemouth, I think, tells you a lot of where Bournemouth are at the minute. Eddie Howe and Jason Tindall, they've done a fantastic job. But I'm just starting to think now it could be one season too much for them. Aston Villa, I think you've got to look at those three. I think West Ham will have enough to get out of it, and I think Watford will be there or thereabouts with them. So it'd be three from those four. But I think you've got to look at Norwich, Bournemouth and Villa, the three that are in there at the minute. I can't really see them getting out. I think Bournemouth have got a real horrendous run as well. So certainly the Norwich and Bournemouth, I think Villa will struggle as well, and Watford will just sneak away out of it as well. But I think West Ham should have enough, they've got enough firepower in their team to get themselves out of it. And a win in the next half an hour against Chelsea will be a massive result for them.
Time for the quiz, Scotty.
Oh, yes.
We need your soundtrack as
well. Oh, yeah, no, this is... We've got till 8:30 to complete this, we're going to need...
Oh, this is Whitey style. 1-300-652-927. 1-300-652-927. We've got a full board of calls, so we've got to knock a few off early. Scotland here. I feel like you've ramped it up. You've spent a lot of time on this.
Set me the challenge, so yes. I'm challenging my listeners.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Now, all right, let's go.
Question one. Big Dog is on the line from Cranbourne. Good morning, Big Dog.
Morning, lads. How are we?
Oh, we're good. I fear for you, Big Dog, because I have had a preview of the questions and he has ramped up the difficulty.
Yeah, I wish they were yesterday's ones.
Oh, yes.
No, Mondays or Tuesday, whatever it was a walk in the park. All right. Joel Selwood celebrates his 300th this weekend. His highest Brownlow finish, Big Dog, was second. Who did he finish behind? I'm not giving you the year.
Pardon?
I'm not going to give you the year. He finished second into the Brownlow to whom?
Sam Mitchell.
And I said no.
Sorry, Big Dog.
Eddie, that was very good.
That's very good. Damien.
Oh, Damien.
Big boys, how are we this morning?
Very well. Joel Selwood finished second in the Brownlow. That's his best ever finish. Who beat him?
Was it maybe Nat Byfe?
Damo.
See,
Damo.
They can't beat me.
Talking three questions, super quiz, 1-300-652-927. Let's head to Tyler in Shepparton, who's up next. Tyler, good morning.
How are we, boys?
Very well, Tyler. Now, Joel Selwood, second in the Brownlow's his best ever. Who beat him by one vote?
At a guess, Chris Judd.
Oh, dear, Scotty.
My producer here wants me to keep giving hints, and I'm determined for this to go for hours.
Well, this could go for hours, because you really have ramped up the difficulty. And I actually think this is the easiest of the three questions that you've posed this morning, which is a real concern. We could be here till... Well, actually, what's Gareth Hall up to in the first half hour of his show?
Gareth and I have an understanding that if this gets to his show, he'll open with it.
Get on the line. 1-300-652-927, the Pataki 3 question super quiz. James is next on the road. James, good morning.
Morning, boys.
Joel Selwood, James, second in the Brownlow. Who beat him?
I'm going to have a stab and say Gary Ablett.
Hey, there it is. 2013, Gary Ablett, when he was a Gold Coast Sun, beat him by one vote.
Two questions to go, Scotland.
Okay,
James. 2 hours to go in the show as well.
Which track and field athlete won their first world title in Doha last year?
Oh,
oh, you're kidding, are you?
I was there. You should have read every word I wrote.
Good luck, boys. Sally Pearson.
Oh, that's not bad. She won one a couple of years earlier. Bad luck, James.
Oh, jeez.
They're rolling in.
This could go for a long time.
This is good. I like it.
Oh, dear.
We've got Kane on the road. Morning, Kane.
G'day, mate. Sorry, what was the question?
Which track and field athlete from Australia won their first world title? So they became world champion in Doha last year.
Oh, boy.
And I'll say it's not on the track. It's in the field. There you go.
I have no idea.
You've got to have knowledge. We're a general sport knowledge show.
Everyone's stuck at home in isolation. They've got nothing else to do. They're ringing up the quiz, and you're going to break all their hearts and knock them all out the sport.
Yesterday, you pardoned me for easiness, and now you need to balance. We've got Matt in Point Cook. Morning, Matt.
All right, mate, I've got no idea.
Have you got a clue for us, Scotland? Apart from...
Well, it's a field event.
Field event, male or female?
Female field event. Ian from Pakenham. How are you, Ian?
Hey, how you going?
You know your track and field?
Well, the kids do a little athletics, so...
Oh, well, hang on. We've got a live one now.
Maybe.
Which...
I reckon... I just remembered. I couldn't... I was going to Google it, but... I reckon it's she's a javelin thrower.
Yes.
Yes.
I'll even let you just have one name, not a full name. That's how desperate we are.
I think her name's Casey Barber.
That's close enough. Kelsey Lee Barber. Well done, Ian.
Oh, Kelsey. Look, it's close.
Yeah, no.
Close
we'll give it to you.
Close enough.
All right, here, this, you won't get this. The boys love this question. In 2015, it was the last year of the subs, the old subs vest. In the grand final, which was Hawthorn v West Coast, name the two players who started on the pine in green vests.
Oh.
Hawthorn v West Coast.
Can I Google that? That's
awful. It'll take you a bit of Googling, actually.
I'm driving. I can't do that.
Have a go. If you get one of them...
You got a hint for us, Scotty?
Hawthorn player.
He's no longer there. Well, that could have been...
Paul Puopolo.
No, that's close. Bad luck.
I was going to go Paul Puopolo.
I know you did. You were wrong.
I know. That's unlucky. 1-300-652-927. Can you get the chocolates, or the ham, rather, on the final question of the quiz this morning? 1-300-652-927. What if we make it just the one player? One of the subs.
See, this is your problem. You just fold. Under pressure, you fold in your red pants.
Hard questions. 1-300-652-927. Jump on the line. Ham up for grand
final. Who won last year's grand final?
Yeah.
You didn't even know. I had to think about that too.
It was very good.
I wasn't here. It was. Who was it?
Were you overseas?
Yeah, I was in Doha.
You were watching
with Kelsey.
Kelsey Lee Barber.
One of the great moments. Last throw, huge,
right.
Emotional.
1-300-652-927. It is the easiest ham you'll win today if you know the answer to this question. The question being, Scotland.
2015 was the end of the subs vests. So who were the last two players in the grand final between Hawthorn and West Coast to start in the green number on the bench?
You know what? I'm almost going to delay the quiz. Because people are finding it too hard. You know what? We've got one more chance here. One more chance before the early mark. Because we've got trainers waiting on the line. We've got to get to Green
right,
Bay shortly.
We've got Chris from Essendon.
Right, last chance here.
How are you, Chris?
Hey, boys. What's happening?
Oh, a lot happening in here. I'm standing my ground. Now, subs vest, grand final 2015, Hawthorn and West Coast. If you give me one of them, I'll give you the bataki.
Matt Suckling.
Oh! Do you know the West Coast one?
Oh, nah, not really. Be a guess. No idea.
Matt Rosa was the West Coast.
Matt Rosa, yep.
Well done, Chris. See? I knew I'd get there.
Oh. Not often, Scotty, that the VAFA makes front page of the Herald Sun, but that is what's happened on this Thursday morning. And we're going to chat to the CEO, Brett Connell, who joins us on the line now after the decision was made last night to cancel the 2020 season. Brett, good morning to you and thanks for your time on The Breakfast Club.
No worries, lads. How are you going?
We're going well. I'm sure last night would have been a pretty flattening meeting after you came out and you said, well, that's it, unfortunately, for all the clubs, but obviously a decision that's not been uncommon amongst footy leagues this season.
Yeah, look, it was one we went into knowing, I think, on the 20th of June, we're all pretty fired up and we're going to have a meeting on the 22nd. And it looked pretty positive. And then obviously some geographical lockdowns have been enforced more recently, which affects a number of our clubs particularly. And it was going to compromise our season way too much. There's plenty of other factors, but certainly that was the tipping point for our board.
So, Brett, like you said, you were close. Was 2 weeks ago, I mean, how close? What were you... You know, the perfect world, what were you thinking might have happened before this latest scare?
Look, from where we were, we'd been through all the insurance issues and there's still some outstanding insurance costs which we need to understand. But, you know, the insurance piece was mighty big in our view. The financial stability of our clubs and the long-term view of just being able to manage the protocols that the AFL and AFLV could put in place for community sport. And there's certainly some things and some hurdles we needed to get over. But the COVID virus hurdle, we just couldn't get over. And the geographical lockdowns. I mean, that's really, our focus has been around our social responsibility and what we're doing. It's probably going to be pretty tough for people from midnight last night for a month. And we certainly know a few people, particularly with our clubs and our umpires, are involved. In those lockdowns, so we hardly thought it appropriate that we charge around having a kick of the footy as well.
Yeah, obviously the VAFA don't pay the players, so there's a few less expenses than other leagues. But in terms of the financial viability of the clubs into next year, where's that position? Because I can imagine sponsorship dollars and all that sort of stuff is going to be significantly harder to find on the other side of this crisis.
It's certainly one of our focuses now to move. Now we've made a decision and provided some certainty to our clubs. It's revisit rule every club to their individual circumstances to see where they're up to financially. Membership's clearly not going to be there this year. Some corporate partners certainly are feeling the heat too, and the discretionary spends down across the community. So it's certainly an area and a factor that we need to build in and work hard that we get all of our clubs returning next year to play amateur footy. The hard costs are standard. You know, talking to all the other senior community leagues, you've still got your training costs, you've still got medical costs, you've still got tape, you've still got lights, you've still got all those other things. It's we're a little bit different, obviously, because there's no paid players in our competition, which reduces our cost greatly to our clubs. But the hard costs to run a footy club are still there. So we're certainly mindful of supporting our clubs and how we get through that. Yeah.
Jono, good morning.
Maisie, Scotty, how are you guys?
What was the Bradley? Highest number you ever wore at a footy club?
Oh, crikey. 33 at the Dogs in my first year was the highest number that I ever pulled on. The one game I played at Williamstown in my last year with the Dogs, I thought I might have rocked up there and got in the high 60s.
Yep.
But they gave me the famous number 18 from Williamstown, actually,
oh, wow.
Which was really nice of them. Like, that was a huge honour to get the 18, which, I remember Simon Lloyd running around in the 18 yep. back in the day, champion that he was. So that was obviously a thrill. So I would have liked to, in deep down, though, maybe got a 77 or a 90. That would have been good.
Who would have the highest number in the AFL at the moment?
Oh, is it 50? Ben Brown's 50.
Yeah, Ben Brown's 50.
I don't think we've got anyone 51? Over 50. No.
No, they generally didn't go any higher because of just because of the locker numbers, pretty much. You know what I mean? within the change room, there's all the numbers on the lockers going to go up to about 50. So I think that's where it sits.
Social distancing now too. You've really got to stay below 50 because you can't squeeze too many more in the locker room. Hey, Jono, before we get on to Thursday night footy, because I think it's a fascinating clash tonight between Carlton and St Kilda, now under the roof at Marvel, I wanted to chat about Steel Sidebottom. We heard, I don't know if you heard the comments from Eddie Maguire last night on Footy Classified, but he was very strong in saying that he won't be dropped from the leadership group. If you were a leader at Collingwood or part of the leadership group, what sort of conversation would you be having with Steele over the last couple of days?
Oh, look, I think the main thing that, and I'm sure Scott Pendlebury's got plenty of experience in situations where he's had to deal with certain things, and you deal with the good and the bad along the way. So you've got to adjust to that. But the first question you've got to sort of find out is why, and it's a bit out of character from what we know of Steel Sidebottom. So that would be the first thing that, as a captain, you'd be asking, you know, why were you in this position? You know, what's going on? Is there more that we need to know about, you know, what's happening with you off the field in certain aspects? And hopefully that the player would open up, especially if it is an out-of-character situation that we haven't seen from pretty much ever in his career. So that's the first thing. I think they're right in terms of not pushing him out of the leadership group at all, because he's made one mistake in how many years has Steel been playing, you know what, yeah. I mean? He's been a great example for that football club for a long time. And you know what? He is one where if you say, this will not happen again, and I know we don't like to use those terms too much because you just don't know what's around the corner, but ultimately, with Steel, you can be confident with that this probably will not happen again. So therefore, it's a great example for the rest of the group to say, look, you know, everyone can make mistakes along the way. Everyone can make the wrong choices. We've got to help them through that. And then he'll understand that the punishment and has accepted that. So I think the fact that he's copped that on the chin is a form of leadership in its sense anyway. And look, he'll learn from this and won't make it again. So I wouldn't be getting rid of him out of the leadership group either.
The 4 weeks, was that about right from the AFL?
Oh, I think because of the way that the story unfolded and grew, yeah. So I think that the punishment is about spot on. It might be I was thinking 3 based on what we'd seen in the past with the other breaches and what they had got, and when the story started to come out, I thought probably 3 weeks is what Steel will get here. He's got the extra one, so it's inflated a little bit, but I think the message has to be hit home hard, doesn't it? That in Victoria in particular, we're in a really vulnerable place at the moment and we just can't be making mistakes. I know the players are tested a lot and they're quite healthy at the moment, but just can't take that risk within the environment of the AFL. And, you know, it's really tough at the moment because the AFL will be trying to making so much decisions on where the fixture's at and where we're going and how they're going to create these hubs. They don't need to be dealing with players, you know, causing problems through breaches.
Strange time for a lot of the players too, who've had to move out of their homes, essentially, who are in those hotspots. I don't know where you lived, Jono, when you were playing footy, but how would you have gone moving
out
of
the hotspot? Don't worry, Jono wasn't in a hotspot. He was, I think, the upper Williamstown area might have been clear, mate, of any hotspots, Jono.
I wasn't in a yacht in the middle of the bay.
You're overlooking the water, Brad.
No, I was a few hundred metres from the water, Scotty, to be honest with you. But I did live in Williamstown. It's not in those suburbs.
Not yet.
And that's exactly right there, Maisie. It's not yet. And that's the important thing that we need to stop right now is the growth of this virus to other areas of Victoria. Yeah, so players they've been thrown another curveball by having to move out of those hot spots. And you know, the Bulldogs will train pretty much right on the border of a couple of them as well. So it really is a time, I think, that they'd actually be quite happy to get on the road and get to another state if they can, play some footy there for a month, and then possibly get home after that.
What's your take? I mean, Trent Conchon put it on the record. There's going to be some players who will have issues, pending birth, illnesses, etc. But he sort of seemed to throw up there was a few who might, you know, not want to go. To me, Jono, it's your job. It's only a short-term thing. This is an asterisk season. Just get in and do it.
Yeah, it's got that feel about it. I understand, Scotty, that I would probably have a mentality similar to that as well. But you've got to understand the personal aspects of things. And I think we do all understand if we had through work as well now, if you have some family concerns, or, you know, your wife might be too far from giving birth, or you've got some illness within the family or what, however it looks, then I think it's only fair that that becomes the first nature of your thinking, and that you might have that opportunity to stay at home for the short term. I sort of hope that we can get under control, Scotty, seriously, here in Victoria, so that we don't have to quarantine when moving interstate. And I know the players, as I said, get tested a lot anyway. But if it becomes that their club might move for 4 weeks, for example, that a player might have to come home for 1 to 2 of those weeks. And I think that's okay. I think clubs can be have got the list size and got the talent and healthiness at the moment that they can obviously cover those types of players, but it wouldn't concern me one bit if a player had to sort of jump on a plane or get back to their family for a week or two.
Now, Jono, Carlton were very publicly said the right things, Brad Lloyd, earlier this week on this program. But talk about pivot. Carlton v St Kilda at the MCG is a lot different to Carlton v St Kilda at Marvel Stadium.
Yeah, it is. It is a little bit, isn't it? I think, the Saints have played Marvel brilliantly so far. And, you know, Bradley Hill, no wonder he went back to St Kilda playing under the lid. Some of the things he's doing is amazing. I actually said last year, I saw Bradley Hill in the airport last year, and I said to him, you'll be in the All-Australian squad for sure this year, Hilly. And he didn't even make it. So that's how well I was going as my judge that year. But I love him. I absolutely love this guy. He is, one of my favourite players in the competition, and he's hit the ground running with St Kilda, as has Hanbury. He's back to some great form. It's a bit disappointing that Zachy Jones is out of the side with an injury, because he was really starting to get some good consistent midfield minutes that he didn't really have at the Swans, so right inside, which he's thrived on. But they get Jaron Geary back, their skipper, so a bit of leadership through that area. He'll try and restrict the influence of a couple of the Blues along the way. It should be a pretty good game tonight.
Yeah, we'll talk about it more in depth in just a second. Just one last one before we sort of leave the issues of the week. The state of the game, and then Alistair Clarkson's comments. He got his way. Mark Stevens reporting last night on Channel 7 that the umpires got sent a memo about holding the ball, which said, where a player is in possession of the ball and has not had prior opportunity, a field umpire shall award a free kick if the player is able to, but does not make a genuine attempt to correctly dispose of the football when legally tackled. So as soon as Clarko says something, it makes a few more waves than a lot of the other coaches. Change straight away. What did you make of Clarko's comments?
Finally.
Are you happy with that?
Yes, 100%. How many times do you sit there either watching Fox or we're commentating at games, and a player will be tackled and that ball will just pop out and you'd be like, that's holding the ball. That's dropping the ball. Like, let's call that free kick. So we're going to see that now, which is great. And it did come to a head this week, thanks to Clarko. I think, obviously on the back of Hawthorn not being rewarded a free kick at all. And there were a few within that game that no doubt should have been paid, dropping the ball, and we would have all moved on. So I think it's great. I think it'll be great for the game. It should move things on quickly enough in terms of that aspect of things. But the way the game is played at the moment, look, for me, it's just the frustration that I see with footy is the backwards kick that the opposition give the other team. So they might be 70 metres out from goal. They'll kick it back to 30 metres out from goal. The opposition will compress that up, man the mark with intent. And then that kicker kicks it back to 60, 70 metres out from goal again to the same spot because they can't switch the play. If you come outside D50 and go back inside D50 with a backwards kick, that's the one that should be pretty much play on for me, because then that'll put teams under the pressure. I'm only going backwards to there if I can switch anyway, so they mightn't pull that trigger as much. So therefore, the kicker at 70 has to make that decision, and therefore he either goes into the corridor and tries to switch it on the 45, or he goes down the line a little bit inboard to set up his team, you know, to get them progressing down the field a little bit more. So that's one for me. But other than that, we've got a little bit of work to do. I think the coaches, if they can get in the future, it won't happen now, but in the future, if we can get more positional play within the game and get that structure back the way that we know our game to be, I think that'll be a win for everyone.
We had your old mate Rocket on Tuesday, on the show, talking about a couple of the changes that he'd implement, and you mentioned kicking backwards there. Is there any others that spring to mind that you would change immediately, or you'd just maybe change that one, see how that settles, and then let it evolve?
No, I think the main aspect of it is the way that the game is coached these days. And that's okay. They're coaching within the realms of what they are allowed to do within the footy world. So they can compress the ground and they can stretch the players out to play zones as much as they possibly can. But for me, and I still will love the game forever, but it's just got to that point where it seems to be a mishmash of a lot of sports into one. Like I look at basketball or soccer and all these other sports that have evolved with the times and they've been modernised. But when you look at them, they still look traditionally like the game that I've watched for 20 or 30 years. Whereas footy, in terms of our game, doesn't look like it did 20 years ago, 10 years ago. It's evolved into all these other aspects of sports, whether that is rotations, whether it is zones rather than positions, and those sort of things. So yes, deep down, you know, I'd love positional play to come back in some form. That can only be coached that way. I'd love to get my hands on a team, boys, and maybe give it a crack. Oh, that'd be exciting, wouldn't it? The fact that you could just, you know, try, just see if it worked. You know what I mean? Take it for a pre-season and see if it worked. And if it did, wow, look out. Look, we celebrate a couple of years ago when Danger hurt his ankle and went down to full forward and Hawthorn couldn't handle it and he kicks five. Like, hang on. You know what I mean? We celebrate fast play when that used to be the norm. And that's what we loved about the game. So how do we adjust it back that way? Well, it's up to some coach to take the courage. That's why Port Adelaide and Gold Coast are going well at the moment, because they play good defensive footy, which we know is a part of the game, but they play quick footy. They play on at every opportunity. They get through. They allow Dixon to stay in the position that he does, or Robbie Gray down there. It allows King for Gold Coast to be in a marking position more often than not, because he's not a player that can get right up the ground and back consistently. So those two clubs are having success at the moment just because of their style of football. Slow, controlled football is nearly becoming a thing of the past, to be honest with you, I think, in the competition.
I can see the headline already. Johnson dot dot. I'm ready to coach. Give me the reins.
On the attack.
No, I love it.
The next Malcolm Blight.
I'm going nowhere. Let me tell you that. But geez, it'd be a good little challenge, wouldn't it? Just to see that if you actually played these guys in the positions they'd love to play in,
yeah,
I reckon they'd thrive, because they come out of systems where they, you know, have played positional football. Now they've got to learn zones, and they don't get to play to the absolute strengths we know they can. Yeah. And it affects the game. And I think that would be a huge shift.
We'll head now, though, to Jason Johnson. Dynamic Food, of course, the founder there. And I have been cooking up a storm following some of his recipes over the last 3 months. And, Jono, we're back in lockdown, so this is concerning times, but good times for those who want to get back in the kitchen.
Yeah, we are, aren't we? Good morning, guys. I'm just on the border of Brunswick. I'm watching it very, very closely in Fitzroy North. But, just dropped my phone. Not great, but, yeah, look... Given it winter, we love a winter's roast, and I think they're the best meals for a leftover, I think. So, you know, whether it be pork, lamb, chicken, I think on Sunday night, I bought a roast chook, had a bit of a lunch out at a winery on Sunday with the folks, and on the way home, I was pretty full, so I just thought I might make a soup tonight and bought a roast chook and chicken and corn, and then, you know, that chicken's, you know, gone into sandwiches, gone into a salad, actually went into a pasta last night, so getting full use of the roast chook. So, you know, I think, you know, the roast dishes, if you buy a little bit more, you can tend to turn them into something pretty tasty the next two or three days. So, yeah, most foods will, as long as you treat them right and you look after it, you'll get 4 days sort of, I guess, shelf life from it, from a cooked product. So you just got to make sure that you sort of, once you've cooked it, you don't leave it sitting on the bench for any more than, you know, an hour, I guess, and then get it straight in the fridge and cool it down so you don't contaminate any of your food. But, great in, you know, salads. I love a pork shoulder. I love cooking sort of like shoulders and legs where the meat's, you know, just pulls apart. You can sort of make tacos, have a bit of fun with it, make tacos or, you know, pulled pork burgers or, you know, make a souvlaki if it's lamb, those type of things. So I think it's always good to buy a little bit more because, I guess for myself, I'm a household of two people, so it's hard to find a recipe that just caters to two. So you're always sort of buying your 500 grams worth of, you know, beef mince, and you're obviously you're making enough probably for four. So you've got to sort of get a little bit creative with the leftovers. And the bolognese can be simply turned into a chili con carne, and, you know, put that on a sweet potato, or you make little pot pies with it. So there's so many different things you can do with it. And,
so Jono, in terms of the leftovers, is roast the best stuff to chuck everything in and make five different meals out of? Or what are some other good foods you can use for leftovers?
I think one of the most common ones, you know, fried rice is a good one. That's just generally open up your Christmas, see what veg you got in there. I love those 90-second rice products that you buy at the supermarket. You know, you don't have to worry about cooking the rice. They're a good product. And, you just whatever veg you got, a little bit of soy sauce, which is, you know, most people will have in their cupboard. And, you know, just chuck it into a wok for, you know, 2 or 3 minutes. Whatever you got going, it's not really, don't really need to follow a recipe for those type of things. Yeah, it's just a great way of using. You've got to have your core. I think you've got to have core stable ingredients, whether it's, you always have a salad mixing, you know, cucumber, tomatoes, those type of things, so you can actually easily, add a protein to a salad. I love cooking, whether it's, roast pumpkin or sweet potato or even, chopped potatoes through a salad, because I like to have a little bit of carb with my. A meal just fills me up. I don't quite feel satisfied when I've just had salad. I like that. I like to have a little bit of carb through it, but there's nothing better than adding a warm veg, whether it be sweet potato or a pumpkin, through a nice salad.
Good news for our Tasmanian listeners, Scotty. The contract has been signed.
Ooh,
to upgrade
exciting. The
entertainment complex down there, the Derwent Entertainment Centre, which is fantastic. About $70 million upgrade too, which is brilliant news for the...
And they're going to build a whole shopping centre. The whole precinct's going to go bananas.
I haven't actually... Have you been down to see the footy down in Hobart?
Yes, I've covered games.
Good experience? I love going down to Launceston.
Cold. Yeah, Launceston. And you get sort of stuck there. Oh, look, it's an interesting experience.
Well, would you go there on a road trip?
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, absolutely. Play golf, go to the basketball. Yeah, tick, tick, tick.
Perfect.
In summer, hello.
I know.
It's got me written all over it.
Me too. If we can get away, that'd be sensational. If we're allowed by that stage. Hopefully we are, but I reckon that'd be fantastic. Joining us on the line now is the Executive Director of the NBL, Larry Kesselman. Larry, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Wonderful news with this agreement being signed with the Tasmanian government this morning. Explain what the process is now, and I notice that the upgrade of the Derwent Entertainment Centre is now all set to go.
Yeah, we're absolutely thrilled. It's taken a little while to get here. A small matter of coronavirus got in the way, so just a small detail, but very pleased to report that we've issued the licence, we've signed the agreement, and we're off and running. So now it's down to a lot of hard work to get this club up and running.
Tell us about the impact of the coronavirus. Was there any fears that through this process the team wasn't going to end up happening in Tasmania? Did it ever get to that point?
Yeah, of course. Look, especially when everything broke, you don't know what's going on, and the team, as important it is to us and to the Tasmanian people, I think there were other priorities. So rightly so, everything was put on hold for a couple of months, but... I think your Premier's done a good job of getting that under control, and then we were able to resume talks about the club and treat that as a priority, and I'm thrilled that we got there.
So they've got a bit over 12 months, Larry, to get ready. The 2021-22 season, the team will be playing.
Correct. That's the plan. So we're literally off and running today. We're going to start recruiting for all the staff members and put the team together. It's not a lot of time, so we're going to hit the road running. Luckily, we've got a lot of work already done, prepared. So as of today, the week begins.
And as with these things, Larry, the name is always a very... You've probably got a whiteboard, maybe not as big as Travis Olds at the AFL, but I'm tipping there's a few names thrown on it. How are you going to... Is it going to be a bit of fan action? How are you going to come up with the name?
For sure. We're going to get the fans involved. So we'll be launching in the next week or so a competition, a page, for everyone to have their say as to what they think the name should be. One thing I will say is it will absolutely carry the name of Tasmania, so it'll have to be Tasmania something. So now it's down to a bit of fun and figure out what that can be, and most important, it's for Tasmanians to feel like it's theirs. That's what we want. I think the craving was there, and it was very obvious how badly all of Tasmania wanted the national team and someone to represent them in Tasmania and globally, so we want to make sure it carries the name. Other than that, open to all suggestions.
Captain Jack Zabel has joined us on this Thursday morning from North Melbourne, although he has had to move houses, I read yesterday. Jack, good morning.
G'day, fellas. How are we?
How is it waking up in a new bed after you were evacuated from a hotspot?
It's not too bad, to be honest. I mean, the circumstances, as we all know, are changing rapidly. And that meant for a few people yesterday afternoon that, yeah, we had to move house. So it is what it is.
So have you got a partner or a teammate you live with? Have they had to move as well? Is it basically like packing up everything and going as if you were, you know, moving footy clubs almost interstate the next day?
Well, kind of. I got a girlfriend who came with me last night. Will stay with me for the next few nights, and then we'll probably go back home, back into lockdown. But there's this, I'm in a house with Jai Simpkin, Mason Wood, and Paula Hearn, other guys who are from a similar area to where I live, and all had to move out. So the club's sorted us out with a bit of an Airbnb across the other side of the city, and we'll just slide in there for the time being until we hear further notice.
That's back to the good old days, Jack. Bachelorhood, I know we shouldn't joke about this stuff, but it's an interesting dynamic.
It is. It's you take the good with the bad, I suppose. It's probably not too bad to be able to go live with the boys for a little while. My girlfriend's with me at the moment, so I'm not sure how long she'll last.
She'll want to get out of there quick.
Who's the cook of the house, or has that been not designated yet?
To be honest, mate, we got here last night at about 6:30, so we all just jumped on Uber Eats, and we're pretty excited about a new menu, to be honest, on Uber Eats. So we'll head to the shop today, and we'll organise who's going to be doing what chores from here on out.
Now, you're not having much luck this year, Jack, in terms of your body. You were unlucky to cop the knee injury early in the season, but then lucky that we had a bit of a break where you were able to recover. And then a couple of issues on the weekend with the ankle and then a bit of a tight hammy. How are you feeling at the moment, and what are your chances for this week?
I'm feeling not too bad. I pulled up okay. I sort of did a little hammy on the weekend, very minor. The results in that of the scan turned out really well, and I'll give myself every opportunity to get up this week. I've also got a couple more days to prove my fitness, so we'll do that with the physios and make sure we get everything right before we do that. And then we'll make the call for the weekend. So pulled up pretty well and not too bad. The ankle's okay as well. They're just a bit annoying, those ones, when you roll them on the outside. It's just going to be sore for a few weeks, but something that most footballers have done in their career and played through.
Now, Jack, the state of the game debate was in overdrive early in the week on the back of your game and the Geelong-Melbourne one, essentially. Is it noticeable when you're playing involved in a game like that?
To be honest, not really. I don't think so. You're so caught up in what you're trying to do out there. You're trying to, you know, do what the coaches are telling you to the nth degree so much that you've got no idea. There could be three goals in the game and you've got you're not too sure what's going on out there. You're just trying to, you know, do what's required. So watching the game back, I understand the point around the spectacle of the game at the moment. It probably wasn't the greatest spectacle on the weekend from our game and a couple of other ones, but that's just the way it is at the moment, I suppose. And with all the players and the situation we're in, with all the changing rules, I think that's contributed a little bit as well with having a three-week pre-season and shorter quarters. Players being a little bit underprepared, I suppose, going into games with the fact that we can't do full team training as we normally would. But all that sort of just rolls into to where we sort of sit at the moment. And unfortunately, I'd rather be playing, you know, this type of football than not playing football at all. So I'm just so glad that we've got it back. And I think we're all willing to do whatever it takes to keep it going.
We spoke to Dean Kent earlier in the week, and he sort of said the quarters take a bit of getting used to. You sort of feel like you come to the bench and you get on and like, oh, I'm about to get in, work my way into this, and then, siren. Did you feel that?
Yeah. they run out pretty quickly, the time. you used to, you know, the 28-minute, 30-minute quarters, but on the weekend, especially for us, we were coming pretty hard in the last quarter, and then you sort of run out of time pretty quick. So it would have been nice for our last two games in the last quarters for the quarters to be back to normal, but it's something that we need to adjust to and definitely get on top of. And it's definitely different as well because you're so used to playing, you know, the long quarters. The shorter ones now definitely have an impact.
I know you're 2-2 at the moment, Jack, but it does feel like you're playing a hell of a lot better footy than that. What's the feeling like amongst the club, especially with Reece in his first full year as senior coach, about the type of footy that you're playing, obviously coming off a disappointing fortnight?
Yeah, the disappointing fortnight is probably a little bit frustrating, to be honest, because we know we're capable of playing a lot better football than we've produced the last couple of weeks, and that probably reflects our results a little bit as well. And our first performance after the break we had up in Sydney against the Giants, we thought was really good to be able to put four quarters of football together. And since then, we've probably only played two and a half quarters of football that we think that we're capable of. So reproducing that on a consistent basis is our challenge at the moment. All the boys are really keen to get back to playing the brand of footy we know we can play, and we know that that's very competitive against, you know, all the teams in the competition. And Shaw has been great for that as well. He's understanding and he's setting some really high standards for us as players, and was also showing us when we're not doing it as well. So it's a really good balance, and he's fallen into that role so well. I mean, he's really his relationships with his players. Obviously, everyone's heard a lot about that, but that really holds him high in our regard, and makes his job a little bit easier as well, I suppose, when he's got to deliver some feedback.
The missing link the last couple of weeks has been Ben Cunnington. How is he, and are we more hopeful with his back this week?
I think so, yes. Cunnington has had a bit of a sore back the last couple of weeks, and he's such an important part of our team that he potentially could have played maybe the last couple of weeks, but I think the right decision was made to have Ben's, you know, safety ahead of his own wishes. I think he wanted to play himself and put himself out there, but he's too important to us for him to go back out there and play and get injured again and miss a bigger chunk. So I think he's pretty close this week, and fingers crossed that he can get up. But if he doesn't, we'll replace him with someone who's quite capable. But yeah, as I said, I'm very hopeful he'll be right to go.
Andrew Kellaway might need some tissues in Canberra at the moment, because the Melbourne Rebels would be having some very cold starts, and they'd get their runny nose early in the morning when it's about -3 waking up in the nation's capital. Andrew, good morning and welcome to the Breakfast Club.
Morning, guys. How are you? Thanks for having me.
We're good. How are you going with the chilly starts in the morning?
Yeah, I was just about to say, it's. I mean, it's not too dissimilar to Melbourne. It's probably a little bit drier, but yeah, I tell you, it's cold.
Yeah. How cold does it get overnight in Canberra at the moment?
Well, I've been fortunate to be able to sleep overnight, so I haven't had to deal with it, but I think it's about sort of touching the -1, -2 sort of region at the moment, which is not ideal.
This is a serious question. I mean, when you're trying to set up for scrum training at practice and all that sort of stuff, how do you go with the ice on the field? Can you actually conduct those sort of drills when everything's iced over?
Well, again, I thank my lucky stars. That's not my job. And I don't have to do that sort of stuff. But I think, I mean, you see the size of the studs coming out of some of those boots. I think that'd be fine on concrete, to be honest.
Andrew, it's been nearly 4 months since you did anything with anger. What's that time been like for you?
I tell you, it's been different. I think it's been different for everybody. But I mean, it's, in a weird way, it's quite nice to be able to get back to home for me, which is Sydney, and do some training back up there and see my family, which, you know, I don't get to see my family too often, living away from there and having been away prior to being in Melbourne. But, I mean, like anything, like any team sport, the people that participate in team sports often thrive in environments where there's people around, and training by yourself was great. But it quickly became pretty tedious, pretty old. So getting back down in the group and being able to do, I suppose, what we do best has been fantastic.
So in terms of the way that the Rebels are set up, the competition resumes on Saturday for us, and it's basically set up as a Super Rugby within Australia. We won't be playing any of the New Zealand or South African teams. But tell us about the way that you're set up in New South Wales and Canberra at the moment, because going forward, it looks like you might be stuck there for a little while.
Yes, I mean, 2020 is going from strength to strength at the moment for us, but we've come up here, when did we get up, last Friday? Obviously, with the spike in COVID cases in Melbourne, it wasn't really feasible for us to stick around there and to keep travelling interstate and playing against those teams, because that's not really a fair request to ask those guys to risk that sort of stuff. Which, I mean, yeah, look, it's understandable. So we've had to move interstate back up to New South Wales, and we're in Canberra until Saturday. So we play Saturday night, and then we'll do our week of prep next week, and then we'll drive up to Sydney for our game up there, and we'll play the Reds, which, I mean, that's going to be, it'll be great for a large portion of our team being originally from Sydney. But, I mean, yeah, look, there's a lot of guys, and we're sort of currently working through all the issues with families and how do we accommodate, you know, guys with young families being away for potentially 8 weeks, potentially 10 weeks, potentially 2 weeks. You know, we just don't know at this stage, so
I guess, I mean, yeah, your guess is as good as mine as to what will be happening, but hopefully we get it all sorted soon.
The Breakfast Club, 6 till 8:30 weekdays on RSN 927.